No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. Welcome back to Revenge of the Birds Radio. It's been a while. Yes, it is. I'm your host, Jess Root. And we're back. We're back from our summer hiatus as this is the week that football actually begins. The Arizona Cardinals will start training camp this weekend. Yes, you heard that. Training camp is here. And we're going to talk about it after I give you the show intro, which this show is brought to you by audible.com. The internet's leading source of audio content. You can get a free trial and a free audiobook download. Go to audibletrial.com/revengeofthebirds.com. Again, that's audibletrial, TRIAL.com/revengeofthebirds. Get yourself a free audiobook download, test out the service, and enjoy it. It's a service I happen to love. But we're talking Arizona Cardinals football, and it's more than just speculation and lists. We're getting to actual football. Now, there have been some happenings around the Arizona Cardinals over the past weeks. One minorly tragic, a couple good news, and one actually groundbreaking, if you want to talk about that. First of the more of the bad news, we have news just from the other, just from this last weekend, where undrafted rookie receiver Damon Powell was victim of a shooting. He was shot in the neck and the jaw, and he is in his hometown of Toledo, Ohio, and he's stable in the hospital, but obviously very bad experience and a very bad timing for him as training camp is about to begin. He was placed on the NFI reserve, the non-football injury reserve. So he will not count towards the 90-man roster, which allowed the Cardinals to not have to make another move. As the second piece of information in terms of new news is that the Arizona Cardinals signed their, I don't know if you want to call it yearly, because there really wasn't a really late free agent signing last year, but Steve Keim has made it kind of a thing to look at late veteran players, as he added on the first day of training camp in 2013, both right tackle Eric Winston and outside linebacker John Abraham. And both stepped into the starting lineup and performed. Well, Abraham had a fantastic season, 11 and a half sacks, and Winston started all 16 games right tackle. But the Arizona Cardinals, Steve Keim did his magic again and brought in veteran tight end, former first-round pick Jermaine Gresham. That's something that Seth and I will talk about once he joins me on the line. But they have now added a tight end with some experience to the locker room, to the team, a guy that's obviously talented. But also the biggest news, and this coming in the last 24 hours or over the last couple of days, on Monday, the Cardinals announced they would be adding a couple of coach interns. One is former Pro Bowl linebacker Levon Kirkland, formerly mostly of the Steelers. And he will be working with the outside linebackers as part of a fellowship that was founded by the Arizona Cardinals. And secondly, this is the historic part. It is believed that this is the first time in NFL history that it has occurred, but there is a woman coach on the sidelines for the preseason and for training camp, as the Cardinals added Jen. Former, in fact, she's always done some groundbreaking work. And Jen Welter, who joins the Arizona Cardinals for the preseason and training camp, she will be working with the inside linebackers, adding her name to Larry Foote, who has not officially decided whether he will remain a coach or whether he will put back on the pads. But he's there, and so it'll be Welter. There will be Foot, and then of course linebackers coach Bob Sanders, who will work with those inside linebackers. But we're going to talk a little bit about the impact of adding a female coach, the signing of Jermaine Gresham, and then we're going to get straight into training camp once Seth joins us on the line. I want to talk a little bit about the Powell injury, and it truly is. Originally, the reports were a bit mixed. I saw the report that came out of Toledo, their Fox News affiliate out there, their local Fox affiliate, and said that the initial report that he was actually quite good, in terms of the forcing that he had, as he was said he was only grazed in the face with the bullet. I mean, if you can get shot in the face, that would be probably the most fortunate way that you could have it happen. Now it turned out that later that night the report changed, was that there was no information about his condition. And then later, which we found out just recently, was about, well, that it was a little bit worse than expected. It turns out that he suffered injury in the neck, though he was stable. I pull up the ESPN report, and it has said that one bullet struck Powell's jaw and another hit him in the neck and lodged between the C1 and C2 vertebrae. Surgery was put off for the week and while they were waiting for swelling to subside. This is obviously a tough thing. It was, you know, kind of a drive-by car with, you know, dudes with hoods on, I mean, masks on, goes by in his hometown and shot him. It's very tragic for him, and I wish the best for him. In terms of how that impacts the team, other than the people who are close to him, obviously that will affect him and his friends. Because of the type of player he was, I mean, he was an undrafted rookie at a position where it doesn't look like there's going to be much roster change. This isn't something that will impact the Cardinals all that much, although the brotherhood within the locker room, if he's made any impact at all with his teammates, will probably feel the effects of that circumstance. But, you know, it's unfortunate for Powell because he would get the chance to show up to the coaches when pads go on and kind of show himself off. And as an undrafted rookie, you don't get too many opportunities like that. The biggest news, not the biggest, but one of the big news in terms of football impact is that the tight end Jermaine Gresham, who was drafted in the first round in 2010. He was actually a rookie with the Cincinnati Bengals when Carson Palmer played his final season there. And Gresham was expected to be an all-that tight end. Turns out, in terms of his career, he's been a little bit disappointing. He had solid, a two-time Pro Bowler. And the Cardinals now get him on a one-year deal. And it turns out to be, if you look at the position the Cardinals have, you can't be anything but excited simply because his talent far exceeds anything else on the Cardinals roster. And we got Seth on the line, so we'll bring him in on this conversation. Seth, how you been? And my goodness, it's been a long time. How are you, buddy?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing great. We just got into talk. I just started talking a little bit about the addition of Jermaine Gresham. And just tell him, how excited are you for the fact that we no longer have to worry about lists and rankings and all of that? But now we actually get into real football analysis coming this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm excited to see what the team has and how they're going to, you know, answer kind of the question of, is this finally the year that everything clicks? Or, you know, something you and I talked about off the air personally, and was last year of the year, and just things didn't work out the way they are. I think that's where you have to look at, and that's what makes you the most excited, because for once in a very long time, their expectations, and that's just not something that we're used to as Arizona Cardinals football fans.
Well, not these type of expectations where there seems to be legitimate hope, a post run, like the postseason is actually a legitimate expectation. I started talking about the addition of Jermaine Gresham, and the reaction is all over the place. Obviously, the addition of Gresham clearly, in terms of talent, upgrades the room that they had with the experience, the inexperience of that entire group of tight ends. There's a lot of potential there, a lot of athleticism, but you've had a combined 17 regular season games between Troy Nicholas and Dallas, and now you add Jermaine Gresham. What was your immediate impression when the rumor started that he was on the Cardinals' radar, and then when the signing happened?
You know, at first I was interested. I'm very hesitant anytime you get a player late in the process like this, especially when you're talking about a guy that's coming off of surgeries like Gresham. But I think, and have the numbers actually come out yet? I didn't even look, to be honest.
No, I haven't seen anything.
Yeah. I don't even think it's actually official yet, right? It's not technically official.
No, the contract was signed today because when they made the announcement, it was just agreed to terms, but no other roster move was made, and they had to do that. They made the roster move today, so he officially signed his contract, and to do that, they added Damon Powell to the NFI, the non-football injury list, because of his obvious, his situation of getting shot.
So, I mean, I think the fact that it was just a one-year deal, you have to like that, and you have to be okay with the idea that, again, you may get a lot, a la Carlos Dansby and Antonio Cromartie, and then they're going to be gone. Or you may get really nothing, a la Larry Foote or who is the guy that, Jonathan Dwyer, those type of things, John Carlson even, where, all were good names, but they really, didn't do much. And I name all three because they all three, quote unquote, failed for different reasons. It's not just that they couldn't play anymore. Injuries, obviously Dwyer with the domestic violence. So I think when you talk about that, you have to always just, you take everything with a grain of salt. If Gresham was a big time free agent, I think you would have seen more than a couple teams floating 1 year offers to him. You would have, seen multiple year offers. But I think, like you said, you bring in a guy that has the ability or has actually played at a relatively high level. You just have to hope he's healthy and can, get back to being a guy that can catch 45 passes for, 500 yards and 5 touchdowns.
And that would be, as long as they're not expecting, Shannon Sharp type numbers or Jimmy Graham numbers, it's going to be great. Now, I'll be honest, I didn't think the Cardinals had a chance at all, based on all the interest of the reported interest of other teams. I thought for sure Gresham was, there was no way that they were going to get him, that he was asking too much or whatever. And then what the reported interest in Chris Cooley had me scratch my head even more. So it feel like, well, because they went to Cooley after that, and Drecke's reporting, even they still have reached out to Cooley and perhaps are interested in still bringing him in. I can't imagine why, he would either take a roster spot of one who they hope can develop, or all he do is be in training camp and then cut. And I can't imagine he wants to, just be in camp where they don't really get paid and then get cut and do all that hitting and practicing, unless he was really, really, really intending to get a big game. But I honestly thought that when they went from Gresham to Cool, they were only kind of interested in Gresham, not necessarily as sort of an impact player, but just a veteran guy. And I've said ever since Carlson retired, I've said it, the Cardinals needed a veteran in that room. I can never overstate the importance of having a veteran in a position like that, especially when there's literally no experience among that group at all. Carlson was wonderful in terms of the work ethic. He didn't work out on the field, but they raved about him in the room on the practice field, and it was great for those young players to see. In terms of that type of workman, Cooley would have added that. Now, the thing that's interesting about Gresham are the knocks on him is, and I was super excited. I was very excited in the sense that, and I'll still say this, he is by far the most talented tight end on that roster. Darren Fells has some athletic ability, but again, he's just kind of learned to play football. You have Troy Nicholas, who still has learned the position. Gresham was a legit talent coming out of college, impact type player. He just hasn't quite done it. He's been good, but he hasn't been great. He's been all right. Solid NFL career. But I was like, how can you not like the signing when it's that much talent at it? But there's definitely some concerns when you sign him with the penalties and the fumbles and the drops, which went down last year. One season he had 10 drops. He's had, I think, 38 penalties called on him this career, a whole bunch of them being false starts. He's fumbled a few times. And then there's the fact that Cincinnati, their coaches, were just really not interested in bringing him back, whether it was, he's never missed more than a couple of games in a season. The attitude of not wanting to play banged up was kind of the thing. So I don't know. You want to think that a guy like Carlson, who was a great influence in the locker room, will Gresham be that same guy, or will he actually, will he actually produce? And the one downside to this, it will, if no injuries happen, it will sort of inhibit the progress of Troy Nicholas or Darren Fells.
Well, I think you have to remember in Arians' offense, he likes to use two tight ends. The problem is, obviously, they have so much talent at the wide receiver position, and now they have two running backs who are, expected to both do something offensively. Now, all of a sudden, there is a thing that you can have, too many weapons, and so you're kind of right. Is that going to inhibit the growth of the role players, and will Gresham be happy, kind of being option five in the offense on, most games? Maybe he'll work his way up to option two or three, but I mean, if you're talking about the running backs and the wide receivers being the focal point of Arians' offense in all his stops, and now, And you get a guy that's a good tight end. I mean, that's not sugarcoat it. If he's healthy, he's a top probably 8-10 tight end in the NFL because of the dearth of talent at the position. But what is his impact going to be in terms of in the Cardinals? And I think the fact that it's a name, the fact that it was a former first round pick. And the fact that it's a guy that, has made two Pro Bowls. You got to remember, most of the time in Cincinnati, he was like option two or three. So, he's going to go down the ladder two rungs in terms of being, an option in the offense. And that's not a bad thing. That's just how much talent the Cardinals have. So I've seen some, projections of, 65 catches and 700 yards and 10 touchdowns. And I'm like, that'd be great. But I mean, if you're expecting 800 plus yards from all your wide receivers, and then probably 350 plus from both your running backs in the passing game, then you're talking a lot of yards already. I think that the signing, like you said, it's a veteran presence. The one thing I'll say is, and I asked a buddy that writes for Cincy Jungle every once in a while, the SB Nation site for the Bengals, and he basically said he wore out his welcome in Cincinnati because he was kind of a diva, but he wasn't a diva like Jimmy Graham, where he produced, and so he can get away with it. It was, you know, he was a diva who didn't really do as much on the field, and then on top of that, like you said, he has a, what's the word? You know, of being kind of not wanting to play injured, as you talked about, not injured, but hurt, banged up, nicked up. And so that, those are the concerns you have, especially when you look at a guy like Troy Nicklaus, who throughout his career has never really played, you know, banged up. So same type of thing.
Oh, he just keeps, he just has strange injuries. I don't, when you break your finger in a jersey, caught in a jersey on your first practice back, that's, come on. Well, and, I hope he can make it through this season.
Well, you also have to remember he was, you know, banged up in, at Notre Dame too. That was one of the knocks on him coming out. So, but yeah, I mean, like you said, he's a veteran presence that, that has been a talented player before. So it, it really is a low risk, medium to high reward type of play.
And if anything else, you get a guy. And so basically, he's a good run blocking who can catch the ball. You kind of have that in a couple of other guys. Only he's established himself over time. And then after that, you don't force yourself to end up having to rely on. You don't have to end up rely on guys like Ofeoma. Who's, you know, never played tight end before this year, or Gerald Christian, you're the, you know, the last pick in the draft to play significant. So now they've got legitimately three guys that they should be able to trust on the field if they're all healthy between Fells, Nicklaus, and now Gresham. And you can leave Christian to be whatever he's going to be here. And MoMA, I think it more than anything will push him off the roster personally.
Yeah, he'll probably be a practice squad guy just because of the size, speed thing.
Now let's talk about, you know, this big groundbreaking historic move. What are your thoughts on hiring this lady, Jen Welter, to be a coach during the preseason? It's gotten tons of attention.
Yeah, it's good in that sense. Honestly, I didn't even realize that it was like just an internship through the preseason until somebody asked Darren Urban if she would be on the staff during the regular season. He said, "Never say never," but the Cardinals have a very full staff already. You know, I think I'm always of the opinion that whoever, you know, somebody, if somebody's good at what they do, they should get a job. And so the fact that it's a woman, I think it's historic in the sense that, of course, it's never happened before. But I also think it's sad that it's taken this long, because there's probably a lot of women out there that could do the job well, whether it be in the coaching ranks or in the scouting ranks or, you know, things of that nature, front office type thing. And so it is always sad when it takes a long time for those things to happen. You know, you saw it with the San Antonio Spurs in basketball and Becky Harmon, and then she leads the Thunder Spurs to a championship over the Sun. So, you know, when you can coach, you can coach. And I really don't think, you know, gender, race, you know, religion, any of that should come into factor, just whether or not you know the game and you can spread that knowledge. But I am happy to see that the Cardinals continue to be at the forefront of those type of things. Because you got to remember, they were also one of the first franchises to hire an African-American general manager. So that was a big deal for a long time with Rod Graves.
And Prince has been very open about kind of opening doors for people. He's had quite a few minorities on his staff. You know, Todd Bowles has gone on to be a head coach, and now this. I really, you say that's it's not just a publicity stunt, but there is a reason why the Cardinals did it. They wanted to do it. Bruce Arians likes that. So the part of it is being part of history. So I don't think there's anything that you have to kind of ignore the part where it's not. It's always a factor. She's qualified, makes it a good move. And really, it's a win. It's a no-lose situation. You get the type of publicity. You may have the historic moment. You give this qualified woman an opportunity to show what she has. But, again, it's just the preseason. The truth is, there are interns in the preseason single year. The Cardinals bring in lots of former players. It happens that lots of their former players go through as coach interns. Like Marcel Shipp was one that went through recently. It's super common. This is big news because it's a woman. Now, the chance that she sticks, there is a slight chance that would be possible in this scenario. She's coaching the inside linebackers. So is Larry Foote. Larry Foote still has a foot in the door at the NFL. Is it, you know, not to play on puns there a little bit, but Foote still might decide to play. Decides to play this year, he'll end the roster playing. That opens up a spot on the coaching staff. If Walter does, in fact, show that he's got the chops to do it, to coach up that position that's actually a concern this year, that might open the door to the staff. But at the end of the day, will actually do anything? Other teams, it's sort of the thing that you don't know what type of impact it will have. It might not have an impact for many, many years, because once her internship's done, then what? Because in the end, she will only have had the experience in the preseason on the Cardinals staff. Out of one mouth will get around, get an interview, get a shot somewhere else, but that might not come for a little while, and it might not be her. It might be some other lady down the line.
Yep, and that's exactly kind of the stance I'm taking. I'm really excited to see the Cardinals, like I said, continue to be progressive in everything they do. You just hope this is the door opener that we all expect it to be for others. Not because, like you said, it's going to be a slim chance, but unlikely that she sticks with the roster, or you know, sticks at the end of the year, or at the end of preseason.
Now it's time to talk some real football. Let's talk about training camp. Training camp is coming. The Arizona Cardinals will open camp. Their players report this Friday. That's when they'll have their conditioning test. I've gone at the conditioning test the last 3 years. This year, unfortunately, because of work, because of training camp being a week later and my teaching job starting couple of weeks earlier, I won't be able to make the run test. Not that big a deal. However, Revenge of the Birds will be at 4 of the practices, the 2 this weekend and 2 following weekend. And then after that, you'll have preseason games where Revenge of the Birds Radio will be in the press box, not only for 4 practices of camp, but also for the home games at the preseason and the regular season. Saturday is the beginning, 2 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. this week. 19 open practices between August 1st and August 28th. The big one will be Fan Fest a week from this Saturday on August 8th. Again, from 2 to 4:30 p.m. That's always the big attended one. For those attending this weekend, it will be sort of the warm-up take, because they won't be able to have pads on. They're not going to be doing full contact at all this weekend. It will not be until, I believe, Monday they can do that, at least. So you'll get sort of the OTA experience with fans, which is a treat for the players, because they get to hear some noise and get the, you know, the adrenaline pumping within the stadium. But it still won't be the biggest thing. Leading up to training camp, what are you most excited about? I mean, what are you most excited about entering camp this year?
I think the prospect of having being able to run the football kind of at will. Obviously, it's the NFL, so it's never at will. But to potentially see a Cardinals team that, you know, able to road grade, especially on the left side, and you know, with the with what we think Jonathan Cooper is going to bring as well. I think that's where I'm most excited right now. Is I want to see if this, you know, run blocking is everything it's supposed to be.
Now let's kind of tell some of the some little. Obviously, if you're listening to the show, head on over to the revengeofthebirds.com. It's our site, the CSB Nation site. It's got great Cardinals content. We'll be on the spot at training camp, giving you coverage there. But this conversation will continue on, and you can see some training camp coverage there. We had a 53-man projection already up on the site this afternoon by Alex Mann, one of our site writers. Talked about some of the biggest position battles, at least on the offensive side of the ball. Let's talk about this. The phrase is, all eyes are on fill in the blank. Who, give me one player, that just one right now. Give, well, all eyes are on whom? Explain.
I think for on offense, it's Jonathan Cooper. I don't think it can be anybody else. It's Steve Kime's first draft pick. They've, you know, he's obviously had a case of the injury bugs, and then last year the inability to beat out Ted Larson and Paul Fanica at a guard spot for, I think it was 6 weeks or so. You know, I think everybody's waiting to see. You know, everybody's hyped up Earl Watford this offseason and that he's playing really well. I think you're waiting to see if Cooper can live up to the billing. I mean, you got to remember, he was drafted, you know, seventh overall, and there's been three guards in that class drafted after him that have been, I think, either two Pro Bowls or are thought of as one of the best, you know, some of the best at their positions. So he's going to kind of have to show that he is worth where they took him.
For me, I'm going to go with the obvious answer, probably the one everyone else is thinking. All are on Palmer, if for anything else, to see him moving around, because we've heard media reports, I've seen that, I've been at practice, reports of how great Carson Palmer looks, how he's moving around great, and all the quotes coming out from him and from team is he's 100%, he's raring to go, all of that stuff. All eyes are on Carson Palmer, because this season ultimately depends on his play. And if he can play, if he can stay healthy, and if he can play effectively and efficiently like he was, in particular in his six starts in 2013. But if you look at his last 15 games, really, between the last half of 2013 and then the six games that he played in 2014, all eyes are on Carson Palmer. Do you have any all eyes on fill in the blank for you, Seth?
On the defensive side of the ball, I don't know. I'm interested in the whole defense. That's kind of a cop-out. I just want to see how the defense is going to react with James Betcher. And you really aren't going to learn anything until, when is that? I mean, even in the preseason, you're not going to learn anything. So I can't even remember when week one is. I think it's the 12th. But you're really just not going to learn anything until then. And what, you know, who he is and how he calls games. And so I think for me that maybe we'll just go with James Betcher and how he commands the defense. Because as we talked about before, the schemes aren't going to change much at all, but the in-game play calls are going to be really, really different.
Now, for me, there's a couple of players. All eyes are, and it's not all eyes are. All eyes are on Tyrann Mathieu. Actually, I'm not going to say Tyrann Mathieu. All eyes are on Patrick Peterson. This is one of the more, for me, is a little bit more understated, because he did have, at the end of the day, was a very disappointing 2014. And from the practices I've seen, he's looked really good. So he's dialed in. He's got his diabetes control. But you're going to want to see some of that in camp. And in the preseason, all eyes for me are on Patrick Peterson, and also all eyes are on, you know, kind of for the same reason, Kevin Minter, the Steve Kime second round draft pick. He was obviously, he was a rookie, Carlos Dansby's first year. Last year, he was playing at about 50% with a torn pectoral muscle. He was playing in a harness, and you know, he had some effectiveness and some ineffectiveness. Is he going to be the guy, or is he going to end up being a throwaway pick with the second round? Anyone else that you'd like to are on?
Yeah, I'd like to mention, I think both second round picks are really kind of going to have eyes on them, because you're talking about they brought in a free agent on a cheap 1-year deal who's, you know, coming off of back surgery, and he's going to try to be an untrafted free agent. Troy Nicholas, obviously. So you Troy Nicholas and Kevin Minter, you know, are they going to step up this year? Minter more so, obviously, because it's year three. But I think you want to see a little more from Nicholas as well. So I think just all eyes are on a lot of those early picks from the first couple of years for the time regime, because as much as you hit a lot of home runs in free agency, I think there's still some questions on a lot of these draft picks.
Let's talk about some of the position battles coming up for you. What would be one of the biggest for you? Let's look on the offensive side of the ball. What would be the biggest position battle that you'd be watching, and why?
I'm interested in kind of the wide receiver depth chart to start with. Obviously, we know the three names, Fitz, Floyd, and John Brown. But who's going to get the, you know, we talked about it, and I wrote about it. John Brown kind of was the guy for Carson, the deep guy for Carson. He was taking a lot of Michael Floyd's targets. And you wonder if that's going to continue in year two, if he's developing a little more as a route runner and gets a little more comfortable. Obviously, he hit a rookie wall last year while also having to deal with the onslaught of Drew Stanton, Ryan Lindley playing. So, I'm really interested to see how this. Maybe depth chart is not the best way to put it, but I'm interested to see how these wide receivers, the distribution of passes go, because I felt like last year when Carson was healthy, we saw two guys on pace for over 1,000 yards, and neither of them were Michael Floyd. And so I wonder if that's going to continue, and Floyd will kind of be wide receiver three in this offense.
And that was an understated battle I pointed out in the article that I wrote on Tuesday. And that was the last out. This is kind of understated, but you hear it in the talk of John Brown, and you look at the success from year one to year two, or the type of production that Arians drafted receivers, the little guys, how they turn out. And you see John Brown and you see the same thing. And my question, is he going to become wide receiver two, even in bigger sets where you have the two tight, one running back, and then you have the two wide? There are obvious benefits in the running game, especially when you have Fitz and Floyd out there, because the two of them block extremely well. Brown's little. So there's the part of that. But is he going to become that wide receiver two and perhaps be that second receiver out there, simply because you just can't take him off the field? And while Michael Floyd, by in the words of Bruce Arians, had a fantastic spring, you know, the fact that they delayed long and exercised that last year fifth-year option, you have to wonder, and with the re-upping of Fitz, you wonder what will Floyd's role be, or will he flourish this year, and they'll, you know, manage to find, because they'll go three wide a lot, and they'll find the path of yards for all guys. Moving on to a position battle that I think it's not a sexy position battle there. It's the center. You've got A.Q. Shipley and Ted Larson. It definitely looks like Shipley has the heads I believe that's how it ends up. But you've got two guys that are legitimately can start at center. I think Larson might. Yeah, Larson's got, 46 starts in his career between center and guard. Shipley, though, and he's a guy that the coach talked about last year, they love him. Shipley, though, is a guy that they have tried for three different off seasons to acquire and finally got him. So it looks like he's Arian's guy, that he's Goodwin's guy. Are you at all intrigued by the battle there at center?
I am, because I've always thought Larson was an adequate center, and Colts fans weren't exactly calling for Shipley to come back. And like you said, this is someone Arians has tried to sign, the last couple of years. So he obviously, we've said it before, the Arians guy, he's obviously going to have to lose the position more than, Larson winning the position. But I think I definitely am interested to see how that's going to go, because Shipley hasn't been great. They're both adequate. And so you're talking about a young right guard and possibly young right tackle, which I'm sure we'll get to in a second. So they're going to need help on line calls and things of that nature. So I'm going to guess that Shipley wins that position, because he'll be the most comfortable with Bruce Arians and his offense.
And I've described from a guy, and I have a couple, I have very few contacts, but one of the contacts I had is through the offensive line. And the comment about Shipley is he's the smartest guy in that room. He's a football guy. They love him, that he works super hard. Smartest guy in that room in terms of the offense. Lends itself to believe that he's gonna be that start. He's gonna be the guy that starts. And the only question is, will they pay the, I think it's with a $1.6 million, or take the $1.6 million hit to keep Larson as a backup, or will they lean toward Watford or maybe Eaton? Well, no, they wouldn't just go for Watford, because then he wouldn't play center. They no good at it. Or if they lean towards a guy like Anthony, who as of right now kind of looks like he's on the outside looking in terms of numbers. For me, the most interesting, most fun position battle to watch will be see who emerges as the second running back. We all see the writing on the wall that is supposed to be David Johnson. But you had Kerwin Williams, who performed pretty well in some work. You've got Amir, who has the intrigue of the coaches, and then Stephon Taylor, who seems to stick around and has done enough to at least be considered in that role. As back in the day, we kind of considered Stephon Taylor a younger Rashard Mendenhall, at least a Rashard point is not going to be the dynamic that Rashard was early in his career, much faster runner was Rashard. But I expect Johnson to win that job. But that's going to be fun to watch, because you've got several guys who legitimately could be the guy behind Ellington.
Yeah, I think you want Johnson to win the job, just for the fact that you already know kind of what you have in Williams and Taylor. So if they're winning the job, you're maybe not getting...
Disappointed.
It's not even disappointed. You're just maybe not getting as much out of your third-round pick as you were hoping. And so... You never want to see a guy that you're touting come in and struggle to beat out guys that you're trying to replace. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
We're not talking obviously about Bobby Massey and DJ Humphries, where Massey's kind of been an entrenched starter and done a lot. We're talking about, like you said, a backup role. So if David Johnson can't beat out a backup role, then I think there's concern. And for the same reason, I think it's going to be intriguing to watch what Humphries does at the right tackle position in another battle against Massey, because that's, you know, if Massey plays really well this year, obviously you're going to probably lose him to free agency, but you're probably going to have been a lot more pressure put on DJ Humphries in year two. So you may want to see Humphries actually push Massey in the preseason and you know, try to make a push for that starting position, because then there's less to, I don't say worry about, but, you know, then there's just less that you have to deal with next year when, if Massey does leave and gets a big, you know, free agent signing, and then you're like, okay, well, hopefully this pick 24 can match up with what he was doing.
Exactly. The defensive side of the ball. In terms of position battles, we kind of know Alex Okafor's got the one side locked up. The other side, that's intriguing. Obviously, they selected Marcus Golden, they drafted Jack Riddick. Marcus Golden, I would imagine, has the best shot at ended up with the starting. But then they also brought in Lamar Woodley. They still have Lorenzo Alexander. And it happened to be Lorenzo Alexander, who in the spring was the always with the first team that are outside linebacker, which, like, remind Cardinals fans before you say, oh, that's exactly what he was in 2013 when he first signed. He was the base starter at outside linebacker, and he was praised. I mean, granted, BA loves his motor rush. He wasn't particularly bad, but he stood up, he was able to well against the run. So I wonder if that will be the case, or if Woodley, a guy that Arians loves to death, will overcome him, or whether it will be Golden. I'm really intrigued to see how that side of the
the entire situation of linebacker for me is intriguing, because as entrenched as Alex Okafor is, I think he has a lot that he needs to improve on in terms of consistent play. Inside linebacker, obviously, the question is Weatherspoon healthy? So you're going to want to see if, you know, whatever's happening with Darrell Washington, if he even wants to play football ever again at this point. Are all questions, you know, the inside linebacker question, I think, is always interesting to ask. And then, like you said, that other outside linebacker position is not just up for grabs, but it's really open to be taken by somebody. And I think you'd like to see it in the same vein as David Johnson winning the that second running back spot. I think you'd like to see Marcus Golden win that spot and kind of prove people wrong that the Cardinals didn't reach for him in round two. I'm also interested in I didn't ask you because you saw the offseason work. What's going to happen at safety? I mean, Rashad Johnson's going to play, but is it going to be Tony Jefferson or is Darryl Buchanan decided now?
Oof, that is one thing that's the other. And it's a battle, not necessarily a roster battle. Playing, because from the practices I saw, there was one day that it was Johnson and Buchanan that were getting all the first-team reps. But then there was another day where I saw more Jefferson and Matthew. Now, from what I did see also is Tyrann Mathieu was sliding down to the slot and Gerard Powers was staying outside all the time, which is interesting to see with Justin Bethel because they have a lot of hopes for him as a cornerback. But it's going to be really, really hard to crack the rotation based on what they got, because Powers is going to be a starter outside. I don't think there's anything outside of just an amazing camp in preseason for Bethel to supplant him. Powers is really good in the slot, but I think they like Mathieu even more. Now, if he plays more in the slot, that's a safety spot. And will that be Jefferson? Will that be Buchanan? How much will they play? Buchanan is still, from what I saw, when they go dime, he still goes down to dollar linebacker, so he goes down to linebacker, but he's seeing a lot more time in safety. That, how that plays out, I'm interested in. I think it'll be Tony that gets squeezed. He'll still see time, but I think he will get squeezed in it. At best, he will be only in base formations, and maybe not even then, because you know, you have the guy you drafted in Dalen Buchanan, who is supposed to be every bit as good as the box, down at the box, Jefferson, because Jefferson is, you know, he didn't have much in coverage, and Dalen Buchanan was up and down, but he had a few really nice plays. That is a position, that's an area where it's kind of, what are they going to do? How are they going to keep all those players happy and all them, assuming the help is there, because someone gets hurt, obviously, that makes it easy. The whole secondary, when it comes to cornerback, to who plays in the slot, who starts, who comes off, I don't know how this is going to play out. That's going to be crazy.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at, because it sounded like in the very beginning, the goal was to get Bethel on the outside and kind of like that nickel or dime packages where you put Bethel on the outside and slide Powers and Matthew into the slot. So to hear that Matthew's in the slot where, you know, he's probably most effective is interesting to see at this point. I'm interested because I had heard the same thing that Buchanan was still kind of playing linebacker in a lot of sets. And so was Weatherspoon on the field, or was it mostly Buchanan by himself?
Well, that particular practice, I think Weatherspoon might not have been there that day, which might have been part of the. What was interesting, I think, is the case is there are a few sets where I even saw Nickel where Mentor stayed in there, and that's going to be one thing. I have a story that I'm going to write, though. He was on the radio recently on AM 1060. He talked about the injury, talked about his goals, and how he played really at 50% all last year. You know, Mentor wasn't a terrible last year. He was marginally effective. He was reasonably effective early on, and he was marginally effective after that. But when you consider that he, from the very first series of the preseason, his pec popped and he completely detached from the bone, and you know, through that all year, that says about him as a player in terms of character, and I think that's a positive for the team moving forward.
Interesting. Yeah, and I think like on the defensive line, the only question is how is the rotation going to go? I mean, other than Clayus Campbell, you know, how often are you taking Peters and Redding off the field for Rucker and Te'amu, or does Te'amu even make the roster at this point? So I think those are all going to be interesting questions, because I don't expect to see Rodney Gunter this year. But, you know, you never know what's going to happen.
Exactly. Are there any stories that, in your opinion, going into camp, some of the timelines that exist that are overstated, that aren't nearly as big as they really are, as are seemed?
You know, just because it's the Cardinals, I probably don't think so right now. Do you have one that you wanted to talk about? Because I don't know.
And I think the most overstated story, at least on a national level, is the belief that Humphreys has a chance to start. I think that's much of a battle. I mean, they will compete, but with a lot of people nationally penciling in Humphreys as their starting right tackle by nature of the fact he's their first round pick, I think that's really overstated, because I think you and I both have said this is kind of a draft for next year, and even, you know, it was really sort of a, and Kime almost alluded to it in the fact that he believed that Humphreys would have been a top five pick next year. So essentially he was taking the value this year, knowing that he had the potential to get a top five player for the following season, already have him on the roster, and be able to have him after having a good season rather than having to pick up a guy like another guy like Buchanan or like a Humphreys or any of those guys that you get late in the first round who usually aren't the, you know, generational or those type of players that iconic players that those can turn out to be. They don't tend to come late in the first round.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I still maintain that I've heard that it wasn't just Bud Dupree that they were upset that they missed on. I've heard that they were upset that the Broncos traded in front of them to take Shane Ray. So if you believe that type of thing, where they really did want a pass rusher at that 24 spot, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. They just went with, well, let's just take the best player then, because the two pass rushers that we were interested in are both gone at this point. So we'll just grab a guy that probably won't be impactful in 2015, but you know what? By God, he'll really make things easier in the 2016 offseason when we don't have to worry about paying Bobby Massey $8 million a year over 4 years.
Now, let's go on some hot takes. You know, this isn't something we're normally doing on the show. It's fun for Twitter, but what do you see as being the biggest surprise of camp, your hot take entering training camp this year?
I think some of the biggest ones I've seen have to do with the expectations of this offense. I don't know where the expectations, or not the expectations, but the idea that this is going to be some iconic offense a la the 13 Broncos.
Greatest show on turf.
Yeah, you know, kind of, you know, I just, has anybody ever seen a Bruce Arians offense operate in that sense? I mean, we're talking about today, Carson Palmer, you know, over the last two seasons when he's played, he has worse numbers, and not in a negative way, but he has less touchdowns and more interceptions than Nick Foles, who's played in like three fewer games in that Eagles offense. Arians' offense just doesn't really like allow them to be this just dynamic, you know, game-changing offense. They're a very they're very explosive offense that can, you know, get big plays, but they're not a team that just goes up and down the field and scores at will.
So the offense isn't going to be as good what hopes thinks it to be. I'm going to take it, I'm going to look on the offensive side of the ball. I don't know how hot this take is. I believe the Cardinals will end up with only quarterbacks on their roster. And I'm not going to say who's going to be on the practice squad. I believe that the Cardinals will not get enough from any of the three candidates to be the third quarterback, that they're going to take a roster spot in the final 53, especially when they have too many defensive linemen and maybe too many outside linebackers that they want to keep around, that I don't think they can afford to keep a third quarterback on the active roster. One of them will end up on the practice squad, but I think the Thomas hope for the future comes to a screeching. Some people never really got onto that train. Some people were all hyped up. I think that probably comes to a screeching halt. And I'm gonna put it out there that it will be found that overtakes Floyd as the number two. I think it happened. I think that's a real thing that'll happen.
You know, and that's frustrating. Anyways, on the first thing, I think Sims ends up on the practice squad only because he's the least talented of the three. And so I think Harnish will probably get they'll, you know, latch on to a couple different places throughout the season. I don't know what's going to happen with Logan. I'm interested. That's kind of maybe a storyline to watch that we missed. What happens to Logan Thomas? You know, people get really upset about that pick because it was a fourth-round pick, and I just like to remind people that Earl Watford hasn't played a down in the NFL, so why are you upset that they drafted Logan Thomas and you don't care about Earl Watford or, you know, those types of things? So, but I think another hot take that I've seen that's interesting to me is that Sean Weatherspoon is going to be able to play the Darryl Washington role as well as Darryl Washington did. It's not that I think it's that hot of a take. It's just odd to expect a guy coming off a blown Achilles to just come in and be healthy and be able to be as athletic and physical as perhaps the most athletically talented linebacker in the NFL. So I find that one to be a little warm to the touch. Maybe not hot, but I'm more interested. I don't want to say reckless, because I understand being a fan is about hope and optimism, but I think it's just you want to see a guy play before you go out there and say, oh yeah, definitely, like, this guy be able to, you know, people are going to be saying, Darryl who? You know, by the end of training camp, because of what Sean Weatherspoon's going to do.
All right. Anything else? Any other sort of insight?
Yeah, I think the last thing I want to touch on, and, you know, something that I don't know if you and I have talked about it, because you know, you're always busy on cruises and stuff. You never can. But we talked about it the other night, and a lot of people are obsessing on the Palmer, you know, second ACL repair and blah, blah, blah. Why are we not worried about his arm more? Like, why is the second ACL tear more worried than the arm? No, it was a legitimate question.
Don't bring that up. Come on, that's way too much. You know, he had a bad arm before, the shoulder, don't bring that up now. That just makes you look like a hater, Seth. Stop that.
No, it's just a question I had, because everybody's always saying, oh, you don't have to worry about the knee. You know, it's the second one. They used his part of his knee and blah blah blah. That I actually had the same surgery, so it's worked out. You know, knock on wood, well for me for the last 14 years. So we'll see. But I'm always interested in that, because we forget that, like, there was a reason that he didn't play 10 games last year, and it wasn't just because of the ACL.
It's funny, because guess what? Remember when, before the 2013 season with the top was a shot, Even national media, even football writers, they've forgotten about that. They don't talk about that anymore. It's all about the knee, and it's all about Carson Palmer being healthy. And if he is, they just pencil Cardinally Peter King to say, if Carson Palmer, 10 games or more, you can lock the Cardinals in, essentially.
Well, and I think that's where, you know, to bring the show all the way back to the beginning, I think that's kind of what we talked about at the beginning. There's expectation, and that's something, the expectation that this is a playoff team. This isn't like maybe they'll make the wild card, you know, type thing. This is, are they going to be a one seed or a two seed in the NFC, and are they going to be able to have home field advantage and, you know, not have to go to Seattle and Green Bay, who are presumably the other two top teams in the NFC. And so that's what the expectations are this year, not like, oh, I hope that they can get to 10-6 and knock on the door of a wild card. No, I think everybody's expecting, you know, let's see if they can get to 12-4 or 13-3 and be a team that's pushing to be a Super Bowl contender, not a wild card contender. And I think that's where the expectation change is something that we've had once as fans since the Cardinals moved to Arizona. Like, legitimate, like, people expect this team to be good, not like, oh, yeah, it's the 2012 season, and Derek Anderson, he's the answer that we've been waiting for.
No, because 2000, they didn't have expectations. 2009, they came through and flame out at the end with New Orleans battering. But, yeah, and all of this, and they're saying it hinges on the health of Carson Palmer. And what do people also forget? He's never won a playoff game. Never.
Yeah, that was
never.
Did you see that stat I retweeted today? That was a crazy stat. I mean, I knew it, but like when you saw it for the first time, that's what made it crazy to me was Andy Dalton, Carson Palmer, and there's one other quarterback. I think Cam Newton. Because Cam won last year. Damn, that's right.
There's yes, there. Yes. They managed.
I blacked out that whole game. I blacked out that entire thing. There's one other talented quarterback that's never won a playoff game, and Tim Tebow has won. So I was just laughing at that.
Oh, stop with
you. Don't even remember that when you like think about it. It's crazy.
Well, anything else for Cardinals fans out there, the listeners, or if they're the future listeners of the podcast download?
No, I just think it's exciting. I think it's fun to be, like you said, back excited about real football and not the list that lists Carson Palmer, the 19th best quarterback in the NFL, or Patrick Peterson as the, eighth best cornerback in the NFL. So I think to see actual football and to experience it again, it's going to be fun. And it's something that, we've been waiting for a while.
All right. Well, that's Seth Cox. This is Jess Rue. And I haven't decided if we're going to roll back in right next week, right after the first weekend, or if we might push it to 2 weeks. That's a whole camp, and we're looking ahead to the preseason game. But this has been Revenge of the Birds Radio. Show. It's the time. We are signing off. Thanks, Seth, for coming on. I'm Jess Root. Everybody have a good day, good night, and thanks for listening either live or via the download.
Have a good night, Jess. See you guys.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.